First today, a new exhibit at the Johnson County Museum attempts to answer a tough question: what is modernism? An upcoming free exhibit at the museum details how the county's architecture underwent a radical modern transformation after World War II. With us today to talk about it are Ann Jones. She's the curator of collections at the Johnson County Museum. Ann, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
Scott Jones is also here. He's co-founder of KC Modern, which is dedicated to the preservation and awareness of modern architecture and design. And Scott, nice to have you too.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, we have photos of some great examples of modernism up on our website right now at kcur.org. But Scott, what's a well-known example that our listeners might relate to when it comes to modernism?
Well, I guess let's go to ground zero in the late 50s at 75th and Metcalf.
Yeah.
Is the Kivett & Myers designed Katz Drug Store, which is now CVS.
Yeah.
Just within rock throwing distance, you've got the Metcalf Bank branch building just at 7200 West 75th Street. You can go south to the Metcalf Bank building, which was also designed by Kivett & Myers.
Mm-hmm.
And iconic, small, good buildings.
And so when we talk about modernism, we're talking about sort of features like what?
Well, all those buildings are significantly different. They used experimental materials. I shouldn't call them experimental, but for instance, the Metcalf Bank building was concrete. It had a zigzag roof. I mean, it was very unique. A lot of glass, even on the lower level. There's a working lower level on that bank building. And if you're at the red light there at 79th and Metcalf, you can see the daylight windows on the lower level. Katz Drugs, interesting story there because it's really a single-story building with that lower level on the terrain. But it's a two-story facade. So Kivett & Myers decided to really scream Katz Drugs out to the car culture, the busiest intersection in Overland Park at the time.
Huh. Ann Jones, give us a sense. Where did modernism, the movement, start, and what was behind it? How did this thing get going?
Well, the movement actually started in – it was in Europe. So it was a post-World War phenomenon. What had happened is at the end of the war, lots of countries had been – destroyed, cities had been destroyed, millions of people died, and there was this sense of, and also the empires had been dissolved. So you had this change in world order, actually, and in how governments were operated. And I think it gave people pause about how can we take this and make something different and new from it.
A fresh start.
It was a fresh start.
Yeah.
And change. The word change is the operative word here because it was change. And so what you have in the 20s and 30s, you have people like Walter Gropius, who was one of these. He founded the Bauhaus School that was in Germany, and it was kind of an incubator. It was like a think tank for architects and designers to come and to come up with new, fresh ideas about building design, about even building homes and properties for lots of people.
And this was before World War II started.
Right. So modernism really had its roots over in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, what happens with these movements is they're slow. They're gradual. Things don't happen overnight. And so Walter Gropius, along with Mies van der Rohe and several other designers and architects, worked at the Bauhaus School until Hitler came into power. Because these architects were also considered subversives by the Nazi government. So it's like, okay, well, we can't do this anymore here. So we're going to go to America. So Walter Gropius and several other of his companions came to the United States. He actually started the architecture design program at Harvard. And so they brought their ideas to America. And as I said, it was just gradual, subtle changes in design and architecture. They started creating, building homes in the East. They built homes that were designed by architects for select individuals. But you really didn't see this movement of the modern look in this country until after World War II.
Let me get our listeners involved here. We're wondering, do you live or work in a modernist building, and how do you like it? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. 816-235-2888. Well, you know, Scott, this movement, as we're talking here, spanned the late 19th, early 20th centuries. What was the state of architecture when modernism came along? What was the impetus for change? Was there a sense that architecture had sort of just grown stale, or what was the thinking there?
It's a very good question, Steve.
Yes.
The you know, there was the Art Moderne, Art Nouveau. There were all these different styles, if I can call them that, the vernacular of architecture. And I think there was just, after World War II, new materials, plastics, the new use of concrete, pre-stressed concrete, those type of materials, and glass was a huge separator.
So the world was exploding for architects then, in a
absolutely.
Sense. All kinds of new materials, new opportunities, new options.
That
right?
is correct.
Yeah.
And as Anne stated, you know, the Germans and the Europeans that came over ended up on – most of them were on the East Coast. Most of them became deans of architecture for those schools. And you end up with a certain style of modernism that you don't see as readily on the West Coast, mm-hmm. for instance. So it's a fascinating thing, what is modernism.
And it came to the Midwest, it came to Johnson County when?
Oh, I would say Don Drummond was a builder in Johnson County in the late 40s, early 50s, actually left town in 64. And he, as he always said, I had a brilliant wife, and she was the one that always encouraged him to hire architects to design the houses that he was going to build. Mm-hmm. He started building just post-war houses, boxes for the, you know, GI Bill, and then became known as the modern architect or modern builder, I apologize. So he brought in, and I don't want to get too long-winded, but through that sweep of 10 to 12 years, there was a magazine and a program in California called Arts and Architecture. And they would hire annually, they would engage an architect or an architect firm to design a house that was their case study home. And so, as it turned out, Don Drummond connected with Jones and Emmons, who were case study architects, to design some homes for him to build in Johnson County. In fact, I just drove by one down here on Ward Parkway that escaped Johnson County but got built in Missouri. And it was called the Castilian House. And Don continued to use them. There was a number of other projects, the house that home built. Mm-hmm. He also engaged a fascinating designer named David Runnels. And Runnels was out of the Cranbrook study or Cranbrook Studios, and it's very similar to what you were talking about, Anne, with the Bauhaus, where they had textile designers, furniture designers, architects. I mean, it was a hotbed of at a moment in time.
Yeah,
like Charles Eames.
So going back to the whole modernist movement in America, who else championed the movement here in this country, Anne? Who were the leaders of it?
There were the architects. There was, you know, Walter Gropius. There was Eero Saarinen with his furniture design. There was Charles and Ray Eames, his wife Ray. There was Cliff May, which Scott might be able to shed a little bit of more information on him. He was an architect. He was actually – he's been called the inventor of the ranch house. Those are examples of people who helped champion.
Well, is that a great distinction to be the inventor of the ranch house? Is that considered a plus or a minus? I'm not sure which.
Well, I think ranches are back in vogue a bit. I understand.
Folks are getting older. They prefer ranches, right?
Well, that's true.
Easier to get around. Don't have to navigate the stairs.
Livability. Absolutely, Steve. Mm-hmm. I understood that Cliff May designed like 23,000 houses. And he wasn't an architect. I think he was just a self-proclaimed house designer and was able to get that much product built. And so many of them in California. Now, we have some here in Johnson County at 77th and Lamar. There were five homes out of 200 that were proposed to be built by Stanley Coward, a builder here in town.
You know, we're sitting here talking about architecture, Anne, but clearly you've already mentioned furniture. Modernism certainly encompassed a whole lot more than just architecture, right?
Correct.
And it would have covered other areas like what?
Art, you know, especially in the 20s and 30s and the 40s. You think about Jackson Pollock. You think about Alexander Calder. in literature, there was Joyce. There was some of the names escape me, but there was also it was also reform in literature. So modernism was not just architecture, as you said. It was furniture, it was art, it was literature. There was music. You have jazz. You have Charlie Parker.
Yeah.
So it, and as I said, they were subtle changes. You know, this modernism just didn't show up on the planet one day.
Mm-hmm.
They were very subtle changes that occurred.
Yeah, I'm still struggling with exactly what sparked it. If it wasn't World War II, because much of this predates World War II, Charlie Parker's bebop predates, or it comes in the midst of World War II. So what's spurring it? Is it just that we had the Roaring Twenties and people were sort of having a good time then? Was it just a reaction to the Great Depression or beyond that? Or
there was a couple of things. I think when you think about people like Walter Gropius and the folks that were in Europe after the war, after World War I, there was this very deliberate move to erase the past. So when you think anything having to do with nobility.
Uh-huh.
So when you think about those buildings, the Beaux-Arts buildings that were built, anything that had physical ornamentation, that reminded people of their past.
World War One, and the causes of it.
And they wanted to forget about it. So you have these designers who are like, "How can we make this happen?" And then what happens here in this country? As I said, it's gradual. Modernism starts to show up in terms of architecture and design in the 20s, the 30s, and 40s, and then you have the Depression, and nobody's doing really anything.
Mm-hmm.
Unemployment's at 25%. In 1939, you have the World's Fair in New York, and the theme of that fair was the future.
Hmm.
So that's where you see they had little areas built with homes, like ranch-like homes. They had cars. I think General Motors had a pavilion there. So they really got people thinking about what the future could look like. And I think like 35 million people went to that fair. So you think about all those mm-hmm. ideas that were viewed by all these people. And then you have the perfect storm in 1945. You've got 16 million Americans have served in World War II. A third of those are coming back on the GI Bill, and they need a place to live. And they needed it yesterday,
yeah.
as we
mm-hmm.
say at the museum.
Mm-hmm.
They needed it yesterday, and they had no money. So what are you going to do here? So prior to prior to World War II, the Federal Housing Administration changed how mortgages were designed. So prior to that, prior to World War II, if you wanted a home, you put 50% down. Well,
that wasn't going to happen.
That wasn't going to happen here. And that's what got a lot of homeowners in trouble with the Depression. And there was lots and lots of foreclosures because those mortgages, the way they were structured, they were balloon payments due. So many people lost their homes. So the government was, how can we make homeownership a reality for these returning vets? It was very, very intentional. So they restructured the mortgages where with the GI Bill, you didn't have to put anything down, or you put 5% down, and now you had a 25-year mortgage.
Huh.
So you've got the vets coming back, you need homes. So the building techniques used and that were created out of the war, you could build homes at the rate of one a day because everything was – you had pre-cut lumber, you had glass. All these homes could be built quickly, and so therefore you could satisfy the need and the want of these.
Let's go to
soldiers.
Some phone calls at 816-235-2888. We're talking about modernism and how it influenced architecture in Johnson County. Our guest again, Ann Jones. She's curator of collections at the Johnson County Museums. Scott Lane is also here. He's co-founder of KC Modern, which is dedicated to the preservation and awareness of modern architecture and design. I should point out that Johnson County Museum's new exhibit explores the post-war modern building boom. It's titled What is Modernism? And it runs through next November. The museum is at 6305 Lackman Road in Shawnee. Admission is free. More information, jocogov.org/museum. And back to some calls again. Florence from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Florence.
Good morning, sir. I'm enjoying the program. I want to learn something new today. The guest, I would like to know, what is the parallel between World War One and the modernization movement? What, and could you be a little more specific about the different architectural designs that were used, like French, Roman, Egyptian? What were these architectural designs that was incorporated in this movie? The parallel World War One.
Yeah, gotcha. Scott Lane, take that one, the different designs that were incorporated in a modernism here.
Ooh, that's a tough one for me, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
From World War One. I think that goes back to what Anne was talking about with nobility and the the whole redrawing of the map and society and everything after World War One. I'm stronger in the mid-century area.
What about the difference between European modernist building and American modernist building? Was there a distinction there or not?
There was some. I think that the characteristics are what would define both of them. You have the use of concrete. You have reinforced concrete. You have the use of glass. You have using natural materials, and you have buildings stripped of ornamentation. If you think about a ranch house, there's not a lot. There's not really a lot there. If you think about the home, the buildings. And if you come to our exhibit, you will see some photographs of some of the homes and structures that were built in Europe after the war.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar characteristics.
Yeah.
Just very simple buildings. There's no ornamentation, concrete, steel, glass. That defines.
Yeah. Scott. Yeah.
Well, and I agree, Ann. First of all, we really need to focus. I think a main focus should be the media. Magazines were huge after the war in propelling new devices in the kitchen and new design standards, new materials. But when you look at those magazines from the 50s, you'll see in House Beautiful, Frank Lloyd Wright was featured as a modern architect in House Beautiful monthly. And it went on for year after year after year. And if you're familiar with Frank Lloyd Wright, you'll see a lot of stone, a lot of wood, and glass. If you look at the internationalists, if I may call them that, the Bauhaus style, I mean, Frank Lloyd Wright would never paint a house white. And here we have these white houses.
Hmm.
And so there's all these little subgroups of the modern vernacular.
Yeah. Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about modernism in Johnson County. And we'll go through a list of examples of some very prominent buildings that folks might recognize. We'll talk about them a little bit, too. And later on this hour, we'll get to the St. Joseph School District and all kinds of problems going on up there that only begin with an ongoing FBI investigation. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our conversations on preserving personal histories or the new, the old, and the unusual in family traditions, you can find those at kcur.org. Tomorrow on Up to Date, we spend the hour with the CEO of the Unified Government of Wyandotte County. That's Mark Holland, and that's tomorrow on the show. This hour, we're talking about modernism in Johnson County, the modernist movement. We're visiting with Ann Jones with the Johnson County Museum. Scott Lane. He's co-founder of KC Modern, dedicated to the preservation and awareness of modern architecture and design. Your phone calls welcome. Perhaps you live or work in a modernist building and you want to tell us about it. 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. You know, Anne, how much do people misconceive modernist architecture as all lines and angles, you know, sort of cold and utilitarian? And are they right or wrong about that?
I can understand that point of view.
Yes.
I think there's a couple of things. Right now, homes like ranch homes built 50 years ago with this modernist design in mind, are now eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places.
Mm-hmm.
So people are still living in these houses. There's still lots of them, you know, in the country. And I think it's hard for people to separate themselves and see what – it's too familiar to them. And I think one of the important things about the modernist movement in Johnson County, if you look at it through the lens of the returning vets coming here in World War II, that's how Johnson County was – that's why it built up the way it did. Mm-hmm. If you look at Prairie Village, Fairway, Mission, Row – all those homes were built in response to this need for housing. So not only is in terms is the architecture important, but it's the reasons behind why this movement happened.
Scott, do you view it? Is there a coldness to modernism, or am I wrong?
Well, there can be, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of that is like art. It's in the eye of the beholder.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody wants to have an austere living environment that's simple. You know, that's interesting. I have a modern home, and mine's not austere and simple. I have plenty of stuff. That's one of the problems with modern. If you're a real purist,
mm-hmm. When it comes to designing homes in the modernist style, I mean, how different were the elements incorporated for, say, a residence, you know, Scott, compared to a corporate headquarters? Were there distinctions there or not?
Well, a lot of the corporate headquarters and businesses. There was a trend in architecture where the building, it actually was marketing.
Mm-hmm.
If you think in terms of Johnson Wax building that Wright did in Racine, Wisconsin, that's a classic example. If you look at the building, you know what the business is. Same thing with the banks, Long Metcalf. I think from a residential standpoint, so many of what we consider atomic branches, you know, modern, mid-century modern houses were post and beam, which mm-hmm. allowed a lot of glass usage and sliding doors. Patio living was huge after World War II. That whole indoor-outdoor sequence was a big deal.
So sliding doors were part of all this.
Oh,
then.
Yeah. Sliding doors were a huge part.
A key part, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sliding doors were huge. And people seek those houses out today.
That's interesting.
It's interesting.
Back to some calls here. Robert from Midtown. Robert, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about Johnson County modernism. Good morning.
Yeah, I just wanted to include in the conversation the book Shock of the New, which was published in the early 70s. And that was my first introduction to a survey book that was able to cover all the arts, in particular architecture, painting, and everything. And I believe it was also a PBS special.
Hmm.
I don't know if you had any of your individuals had would comment on that.
The book Shock of the New, does that ring a bell with anybody?
No, not familiar.
Drawing blanks here, Robert. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Sounds interesting.
Well, it was the first time. It was, I think, published in the early 70s, and it was, a book that also had it was a PBS special on the rise of modernism. And it was a very good survey book for anybody interested in wanting to look at that perspective of modernism in the early 70s.
I'm glad you mentioned it. Thanks for calling, Robert.
Thank you.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to some examples, other examples of modernism in Johnson County, maybe talk about them just a little bit. Ann, what else would you point to and give us a sense of where it is and when it was built?
Okay. One of the areas, it's in Overland Park, and it was actually the neighborhood was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 2011. It was the first neighborhood district in the state of Kansas to have this distinction. It's the Broadmoor Ranch Historic District, and its boundaries are Metcalf to Broadmoor, and from about West 68th Street to West 69th Terrace. So it's just... it's just east there of Metcalf. There's about 33 homes, and a couple of things about the neighborhood.
Are they all ranches?
All ranch style,
mm-hmm.
built between 1953-1959. The land was subdivided, improved, and then sold to builders who built homes for the families in that area. 27 of the houses still retain their architectural integrity. So that was an important caveat when it was listed to the National Register. So when you drive through the neighborhood, the roof lines, you'll see the two-car garages, which says something about the car culture at that time.
Yeah.
27 of those homes still retain their architectural integrity.
What does that mean exactly?
The home that nobody made any changes to their home. So they didn't change. They may have changed the roofing material.
They didn't add on things that didn't fit.
There were no add-ons. They pretty much kept the design, the original design.
And why is the National Register interested in that for homes that aren't – that I always think of homes that are older than that.
And here we go.
Yeah. Here we go.
Here we go. Mid-century modern, one of the things to think about when you hear that term mid-century modern is homes, buildings, structures that are past the 50-year mark now meet that – now are considered historic. And what you're – what really has to happen or to think about is why are these structures important in the bigger picture of American history? And this neighborhood – Broadmoor Ranch, and there's a couple other neighborhoods in the country that also are very similar, is that it represents – is a representative example of how suburban development happened in Johnson County.
Okay, okay.
Secondly, there were the social factors. If you read the National Register nomination for Broadmoor Ranch, it's lengthy, but it's interesting because the person who did the research went through and – identified all the individuals who built these homes. And what you find is that these were people who were moving to the suburbs but were driving to the city to work. And so that was a clear distinction of that early suburban development. The jobs weren't in the suburbs yet. So many people living in Johnson County, the bedroom community, were driving into the city to go to work.
And so now that this neighborhood has this designation, does that limit them what homeowners can do to their homes?
I don't think it really does. But what's interesting is these homes have been there, you know, for 50 years or more, and nobody's made hardly any changes to them. And you also have families. I think maybe in certain cases there's a second generation living in the home. So. Mm-hmm. Or the original homeowner may be still there. So,
how about another example of modernism, Scott? What would you point to? Something else that people might recognize?
Well, there's a great neighborhood at 98th and Aberdeen over in Overland Park. And it came about exclusively because of Don and Francie Drummond developing that property, hiring the architects from California. If they were going to go in and develop in a J.C. Nichols neighborhood, for instance, Nichols was so restrictive, so was Crow Brothers and Leawood, and they wouldn't allow modern structures because they thought it would devalue the other properties.
Why did they think that?
It was new. Mm-hmm. I think it was because it was new. And there were some interesting – I mean, we break out into some organic modern architecture. Bruce Goff was an architect here in Kansas City that designed some homes that are very what's the term? I mean, they're kind of over the top from a residential design standpoint. Mm-hmm. And there's one at 79th and Fontana that Miller Nichols said was a very dangerous home. Huh. It got built because it was built on a sub-power station lot, and it wasn't part of the Nichols holdings. Same thing happened with the Hyde House on 67th Street. There was an architect named Lloyd Rourke who owned seven lots. He would only sell to architects, and you could only build a modern home. So these little pockets in Kansas City, that's why we have these little pockets of modern homes.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't embraced across the board.
That's interesting.
They just, you know, they're kind of like sports cars, not for everyone.
Melissa tweeted us this to ask, any thoughts on a neighborhood at 98th and Aberdeen in Leawood, a very Frank Lloyd Wright-esque? Ring a bell?
Lived there. Enjoyed it.
You do live there?
I lived in that neighborhood
in the
for
past
8 years.
Tense. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was Don. That was the one I mentioned. That was the Don Drummond, Francie Drummond designed neighborhood. And the way they sculpted the lots. I would call those atomic ranches. Frank Lloyd Wright probably would not agree that, you know, everything gets bundled into. It's like Coke, you know.
Atomic ranches meaning what?
Well, post and beam, stone, glass, deep overhangs. More of a modern, more of a California aesthetic.
You know, is there a structural, does there tend to be a structural problem with some of these modernist buildings? And you think about some of, there's a church on our website, I'm forgetting which one it is, you know, big, long, sloping roof. I can only imagine the roof of that building has been a nightmare for the owners of that building for many, many years. Are there common structural issues with these buildings or not really?
Well, I can think of a couple of examples. And I actually saw this in a Drummond home. I was looking at the big plate glass windows. And they were originally insulated. Mm-hmm. So what you had was lots of condensation in the wintertime.
Yeah.
That was not good. If you look at the Prairie Village homes, the basements, you know, the homes were built quickly. Nichols Company, they use that term. They built a house a day to keep up with demand. Basements built on cinder blocks.
Yeah.
I think there were a few issues there. But you, because you're building with new materials and you're not really sure how they're going to react to the environment, and then you're also building quickly. So something's going to happen.
Something's going to give.
Something's going to give in all that.
Hey, has there been a resurgence in all of this, Scott? A resurgence of modernist building in Johnson County, or really anywhere for that matter?
Oh, absolutely. On both sides of the state line,
really?
You can drive around. There's a magazine called Dwell, and you may have heard of it, Steve.
Called
and a lot
Dwell.
Of people, Dwell.
Great name for a magazine. Yeah, I get it.
It works.
I know what that's
I guess.
About. Yeah.
And there's a lot of homes that are featured in there. Architect designed homes, flat roofs, lots of expanses of glass. Maybe a more tightly designed home because we don't have large lots. We're trying to do, you know, with the infill housing in Midtown, for instance, it's a higher density thing. There's a huge resurgence in there. I know people that specialize in just those kind of homes.
Again,
in construction, I'm sorry.
We have photographs of several examples of modernist structure on our website, kcur.org. Is there another example of modernism you throw out here, Ann? You got a whole list there.
Well, I wanted to mention just a couple of areas in the country, if I could, that really fall in line with the Broadmoor Ranch. There's Arapahoe Acres just outside of Denver, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
127 homes built late 40s, early 50s, also on the National Register of Historic Places because of their development, their deed restrictions. Atlanta, Georgia, Collier Heights. Very important neighborhood, also on the National Register of Historic Places. It was a community designed and built by African Americans for African Americans. Hmm. So this was a community that instead of wanting to face the tensions and the violence sometimes it took to move into an all-white neighborhood, they built their own community. And it's about 1,700 homes built between 1941 and 1979.
Yeah.
And Tulsa, Oklahoma also has a couple of areas. They had a lot of companies there after the war, American Airlines. I think Tulsa had the highest number of scientists and engineers per city after the war. So they built homes for these people.
Just quickly, have we lost any of these homes to the wrecking ball over the years?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, quite a few. I had mentioned Don Drummond's home. He was at 6920 Belinder.
Yeah.
When you get into certain areas, in Mission Hill is a great example where the land values are so high that sometimes it doesn't matter if you buy a house and tear it down.
Yeah.
You know, you're gonna be okay in your investment, and that's a concern.
Well, again, the Johnson County Museum's new exhibit explores the post-war modern building boom. It's titled, What is Modernism? It runs through next November. The museum is at 6305 Lackman out in Shawnee. Admission is free. I want to thank Ann Jones from the Johnson County Museum and Scott Lane with KC Modern. Thanks for a great conversation. Glad you guys
came
in.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.